This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Dylan Brooks saying hello to NBA playoff basketball, and Desmond Bane, a part of that young core for the Grizzlies that have this city of Memphis so fired up.
You know, with the bubble plus the regular season with the, you know, the short offseason, it feels like we finally went through like one and what, a fourth? Was it like 1/7 of a season? I don't know what the bubble represented in fractions, but it felt longer, huh?
It did feel longer.
it felt like really long. But, you know, Memphis stayed busy through all of that because Memphis actually got two play-ins, in one in the bubble, and then they got one this time. The first time they played Portland, that was the inaugural version of it. They didn't win it. Then they get into the play-in again for 2021, and surprise, surprise, they do beat the Spurs, which I don't think anybody was terribly shocked by, but they did beat the Warriors in overtime, which gave them that last playoff spot. They got the game one win over the Utah Jazz, which was impressive. Dylan Brooks, I remember in particular for the Grizzlies, played really well in that one. And then they just lost the next four after Donovan Mitchell came back. But, you know, a little bit of baby steps for the Grizzlies. And I say babies almost pun intended, because this is a very, very young and experienced team.
Yep. The thing about them is the bubble was basically they would have been in, and then the bubble, they sort of had to survive. And mm-hmm. then now they got mysteriously hot. And then they're just one of those teams like, who are these, you know, ragtag kids of, you know, there was, you know, Ja Morant and just the rest of them. It's just like, well, you know, Jackson was injured for most of the year, and it's just a bunch of young people. I mean, you know, Valanciunas is the grizzled veteran at 29 years old.
It's just unbelievable. Also, I got to give some credit also in terms of experience to Kyle Anderson. He played in San Antonio before that, you know, gives him a little bit of experience there too. Ja Morant, obviously got drafted the same year as Zion, pretty much on the same track as Zion. Would you say he's a little bit ahead in terms of the stardom, in terms of his influence on his respective team? I mean, he is the star, you know, so is Zion in New Orleans, but I'm not trying to compare the two. They'll always be forever interlinked because they got drafted in the same year. But I mean, Morant is definitely on his way. Like, do you feel like he's a superstar right now?
Oh, of course he is that franchise. And it was the, you know, why you taking him? Is he going to be that good? You know, he's just from a small school. How he doesn't have the pedigree. Plus, he's been healthy with, you know, Zion has just been injured. And then we need to go very slow with him because this injury could kill his career already. And
yeah, Morant came out like a cannon when he started with Memphis. And they were I don't want to say they were in it to tank. And when the 2019-20 season started, when they hired Taylor Jenkins and they kind of did away with Mike Conley and a lot of the experienced guys, but I don't think they thought they were going to be as successful as they were. I think that did come as a little bit of a pleasant surprise for them. Really explosive, 19 points, 8 assists, gets 4 free throws a game. He needs to work on his 3-point shot. He needs to work on his free throws. He only shoots 74%, which is not good. He almost like plays like Derrick Rose. You just worry about it, you know, how explosive he is, because if he lands wrong on one of these dunks, it could be terrible. That's my one problem. Jaren Jackson Jr., you had mentioned, you know, came back in April. He looked okay. You know, I mean, maybe his growth was stunted by the injury, but I mean, he was picked very high, and I wonder if they still have high prospects for him, is my concern.
Yeah, they shouldn't. This was, you know, he was, you know, to you, he was a cornerstone until the injury, and then he came back, you know, as one does after a long injury. He was, you could see where, okay, this is where
will he get a max extension, or not a max extension? I wouldn't go that far, but will he get an extension this right now in this offseason? Do you think it'll be kicked into the next year? Like how badly do they want to secure him?
But this is the weird thing about Memphis is they're literally bringing their entire team back. They got like 13 or 14 players.
And they got a really good deal on Dylan Brooks. Like, he's already locked in.
everybody's like on an expiring contract. Mm-hmm. You got six players.
Right. Kyle Anderson, Grayson Allen, Tyus Jones. You know, they can turn down the option on John Conchar, which I think they're going to do. And then the big one, I think, with the free agency is two things. For this summer, I would say Justice Winslow has a team option at $13 million. Now, they brought him in in that James Johnson, Andre Iguodala thing when they had Iguodala, but he didn't want to play there. But Winslow didn't get a lot of blow for the Grizzlies. Like, do you think that he'll stay?
The thing is, he came in injured, and then mm-hmm. he never really got a fighting chance. So he is sort of the big question mark of, well, does he fit in, you know? And again, there's 1 year on his deal. So, $13 million, we could pick that up. We're under the cap. So
and you're freed
no...
up because Gorgui Dieng is off the books now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big part. But in terms of their offense, I would say they were middle of the pack. They play really fast. Defensively, actually, they were pretty good. You know, they were fourth in rebounding, first in steals, first in fast break points, sixth in defensive efficiency. Those are good marks because Jenkins, I felt, had in the 2020 year, the first in Morant's rookie year when Memphis was really playing well, they had a bad defense but a pretty good offense, albeit a sloppy team. It feels like they kind of tried to get back towards the meat in the middle somewhere so that they could be more of a quality team. I like Brandon Clark. I think he still needs to improve some, though.
It was a solid pick because he was a 21st pick-ish. He's mm-hmm. a 22-minute guy. He's like Ed Davis. Like, he just come off the bench, give your minutes, get your points, mm-hmm. get your buckets, and then, you know, don't expect too much from him. The thing about Memphis is, like you just said, they've stuck to drafting. And then it's like, we need to draft well because we can't keep missing.
Right.
And then with, you know, Morant, and like I said, I like Clark, Jackson. You're – and this year, they, you know, they got Desmond Bain, and they gave Jontay Porter some money.
Mm-hmm. And Xavier Tillman played a little bit when they had injuries. That was another one.
Yep. So that's the thing is, what do you do with the roster? What do you do going forward when you have this team that's so young, doesn't really have, they don't have that second piece yet, but you can't really add anything.
You try to grow on top of that little bit of growth year to year that you've had these past two, you know, got to the play-in and didn't get it. Got through the play-in and then got into the playoffs. Now you've had a taste of it. And you just try to go another round with this crew. And if you see anything going backwards, then you might, you know, their cap room is somewhere in the range of like maybe like 20, somewhere around maybe like 20 to like 18 million. Like it's okay. It's not great. Like if you want to add a veteran, like around 15 or 17 mil, you probably can. Justice Winslow being off the books, he makes that even better if you decide to decline him. But I don't know if they're really like you made a good point. Like, I don't know if they're in the market to really like take a stab at that. So maybe keeping Winslow and just trying to make another shot at it with a stable, not messed with roster that they have now, albeit a young one. You just take another run at it in 2022 and you just see if the improvement shows.
Falling out of bounds and threw a beautiful pass to Devontae. Oh, my goodness! Didn't see that coming! Hundredly deep!
Yeah, tap the top of your head. You just made a highlight, and I think Sabonis was involved.
Oh, LaMelo Ball with some serious yeast!
All right, Adam, let's talk about the Charlotte Hornets. And one of the only times ever in our six-year history of doing this show, we're actually looking very positively on the Charlotte franchise going into the offseason. You know, Mitch Kupchak, I don't think he's earned any roses for quite a while, whether he was the GM of the Lakers or the GM of Charlotte. And then Michael Jordan being the owner, that goes without saying. But I think the drafting of LaMelo Ball in the draft, I think he was picked, number three? I think that was the harbinger of it all because Ball was the rookie of the year, really gave them a spark, not only from a marketing standpoint, but from a winning standpoint. And they got within striking distance of making a playoff spot.
They did, which you could be like, yeah, that's overachieving, but they also dropped a pretty penny on Gordon Hayward, who you forget.
He played well, though, before the foot injury.
Before, yes, his made of glass came back to haunt him.
He played 44 games out of this one, yeah.
Yeah, so it's one of those, you're getting a damaged half a year player, seems like, with Hayward now. So they're at a sort of an interesting crossroads because you have, like I said, you're going to go around with Ball. You could build off with him.
And Rozier.
The problem is, yeah, you have Terry Rozier, but next year is the last year of his deal. So right. If you want to keep him, who basically...
You got to go up more. He's making 19 to 20 mil. He's going to get more.
Yeah, he's going to get more. And if you have, you know, Ball as your replacement, well, what can you possibly move him out for something? You have, you know, your boy Miles Bridges, who's eligible for an extension, who will get paid. Mm-hmm. And other than that, you don't really have much. You have Cody Zeller, whom you're the only one who seems to, you know.
No, I don't. Stop.
Not you. You, not you. I meant you as in Charlotte are the only one to seem like, oh, he's good.
I was like, I remember when they drafted Cody Zeller. I think they drafted him fourth or third in 2013.
They drafted him fourth, and they gave him
It was such a bad move, and this was just a classic MJ Charlotte move where it's like, what are you doing? That's why when they drafted Ball and it worked out, and everyone was like, this is so against type for the Hornets. They never draft that kind of player, which we can talk about another day.
You have PJ Washington, who's a solid player.
But great. Yeah.
Malik Monk was a disappointment, unfortunately, who I think we're both like, oh man, I don't know why.
Let's just hit up on his free agency issue before I like to summarize it at the end, but let's just hit him up just to get out of the way. He's had the drug suspension. He struggled. He did finally start to play well as a sixth man here and there this season, but he's a restricted free agent this year. There's two options. You can let him float out there in the market and sign a tender, or you just renounce his rights. What do you do?
I think you just sort of see what the market is and maybe match it, because as a, you know, you said he thrived in a six man role, but being a six man isn't what they sort of thought he could be. And
yeah, but you also got really, but Devontae Graham works too as a six man, and he's a restricted free agent too. And he's going to get an offer sheet. He's going to get that Malcolm Brogdon type of market.
He's not going to get 20 million for
he's
for
a good shooter,
like,
and he can pass.
But it's just like they have a lot of openings, and I don't really think they're an attractive spot yet. You can say, oh, you can play with LaMelo, but there's not really much else there right now. So it's sort of just a very hollow team.
Yeah, a little bit of youth too. You got, you know, you talked about Bridges, who is a highlighter. By the way, I mean, we've talked about this, I think, in other shows on the NBA team regular episodic ones, is that, but Miles Bridges over Clint Capella or Anthony Edwards over Yuta Watanabe, which one was your favorite dunk this year?
It would be have to be Edwards.
Okay, Bridges was nasty. That was a nasty dunk. He's a highlight reel. He's been working on his shooting vastly over the last year. So and yeah, he is eligible for an extension. I can see it being worked out, but I don't see him getting something like, for example, Trae Young. Like, no, he's not max. Like, I could see him getting something around 16 to 17 million.
What does Charlotte do to go forward then? Just sort of
just keep rolling with PJ Washington, Bridges inked up to a deal, give more playing time to Ball, make sure that he stays healthy because he had the injury, obviously, that almost took them completely out of the playoffs because they were rolling before Ball's injury.
Do one more year, hope you get the 8 seed, and then try to kick it down for 2 years from now.
Right. Like I think in free agency, cause their active cap is right around 74 million. Unless, I think that's freed up a whole lot by the aforementioned Cody Zeller. He had 15 million on the books. He's finally finished. And I hate to say that about him, but he's not a guy that's in your future. I'm just being real. He's more that guy that you can get on the cheap as a bench guy, like a Frank Kaminsky. That's who I see. That's who I see Cody Zeller as. You hit a home run twofold with the Martin twins, Cody and Caleb. They actually play pretty well off the bench. Bismack Biyombo is unrestricted. He still can rebound and block some shots. Would you sign him to something smaller? Or do you think he'll just leave?
Wherever he'll go, he's not a
Because you still got Brennan Terry and Nick Richards, who they got in the second round. So like they can play them too.
Either way, I don't know if they can try to hit a home run this year. I don't think a home run is out there for them. So I think, like we had said, just sort of hit another single. Just keep trying to don't lose the momentum.
Get something good in the draft. You know, I mean, you're not going to be in that position to get a player like Ball, because I don't know exactly their spot. I want to say what it's in the high teens, something like that.
Yep.
Okay. So yeah, they're just try to hit something good, like Miles Bridges was. Like, try to get something like that. Don't get a Malik Monk. Don't get one of these guys who you think is going to fit into one specific role as like a big man or a shooter. I wouldn't even do that. Like, if I was in the draft position for Charlotte, I would just select the best player available. That's what they did with Ball, and look what happened.
Post up Harrison Barnes out of the timeout. There's Sean Holmes. Blocked there by Curry.
What?
Steph with the defense.
But look at Steph from behind.
All right, Adam, the Golden State Warriors. This is a team that has been in the mix in the national talk for a really long time. They've won 3 NBA championships with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. They had Kevin Durant in the mix. Curry and Klay are still there. Klay's been on the sidelines with the two major injuries back to back. Steph Curry, in his absence, was the scoring champion, but they just fell short of making the standard playoffs because they lost to the Lakers and the Grizzlies. A little bit of a disappointment. There was some bright spots there for the Warriors, but their cap situation is.
Yeah, but you're getting Klay Thompson back. So as long as you have Steph and Klay, your team
and Klay Thompson, breaking news, is a really awesome player. He might be the best shooter I've ever seen in my life. And I'm talking about ever. Better than Steph Curry, better than Reggie Miller, better than all those guys.
So well, as long as you have them, that's all you really need.
Or so you think. We don't know because we've not seen them without Kevin Durant since 2016. Now that team went 73-9. But they were younger then. That was 5 or 6 years ago.
But as with the news and everything, yeah, they're not tooled to have a sort of slow rebuild. So getting, you know, the number 7 pick isn't going to do anything for them, because you need, with Steph Curry being 34, they're not built to be, let's wait 3-4 years down the line. They have
to. Well, I don't think Steph Curry wants to be. I think this is the doomsday scenario for them. And the doomsday scenario is not a big move and swinging and missing. I think this is the doomsday scenario. It's if you stand pat, and this is why I don't think Bob Myers will. The doomsday scenario is if you stand pat with the same roster, Wiggins, Draymond, you bring back Kelly Oubre, you keep James Wiseman, try to develop him, and blah, blah, blah. Klay Thompson comes back. He's elite. He's almost the same. He's like Kevin Durant. He's like the same Klay Thompson we saw before the Achilles and the ACL. He's a great shooter. He's averaging 27 a game, and Steph Curry is still on fire, and Draymond Green is still passing the ball all over the place to open shooters. They get to the playoffs, and they get bounced in the first or second round because they're not good enough. That's the doomsday scenario, because now the owner, Joe Lacob, is going to be looking at this thinking, holy shit, we're not good enough as we stand. We have got to make a move. Or Curry or Klay are going to say, you know what? Get me out of here. We can't win here anymore. So yeah, in that case, yes, a move might be. In that case, yes, I can see a big move coming, but it has to have Andrew Wiggins attached to it.
That's of course. He's good as gone.
I don't say good as gone. It's going to be hard to move him. That's the problem. He makes $30 million a year.
Yeah, but he can produce as a number 2 or 3 guy
on a maybe middling team that's trying to barely make the playoffs, like a Charlotte or an Indiana. Like, yeah, that's cool, but I don't think they're in the market for a wingman who has never reached his full potential, can't make 3-pointers, and is incredibly inefficient. I don't know.
Yeah, but they have to do something. We both agree. We know they're not going to stand pat. They're not going to draft for the future. Their future really is sort of non-existent. They have a 2-3 year window period. So they're go- going to have one last load up. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see how they do it. We both know they're going to. They're not going to be, if it's just like, oh yeah, you're going to sit there with two lottery picks, they're, we'll be all like, what happened? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, as we're recording this, Kevon Looney has already said he's opting in. That's about $5 million. That gives you a little bit more to attach to a deal if you want to move up in the draft with, and then even adding James Wiseman, which I don't think they want to do. I think they kind of floated that out there just to get people enticed. I think I think Wiggins with Looney is something that could happen. I think they like Jordan Poole. I don't think they would move him. But then again, you know, if it means you get a good veteran in the mix.
Yeah, but you're not going to move $2 million players. You're just going to get in rookies. You're just going to get another assorted rookie in return. And that's basically what Kevon Looney has been. He hasn't really been anything really, you know, this I think was like his first, you know, was this his first year he like played the full season? He might have played one before when he was healthy, but he's never healthy.
Sure.
And I don't think he's ever averaged above 20 minutes. Like
no, the only time the irony about Looney in the championship years was that he played his best in the playoffs when he had a whole year to rest up. It wasn't like he was Shaq. It's like, we got to get Looney ready for the play. It was just that it just so happened that he would be healthy for the playoffs, and he was needed because they always had some big man that was unavailable during the finals, so he would almost be forced to play by attrition. So it was just one of those weird. That's always been the struggle with the Warriors, even during the Durant years, was like they never had a stable big man. That's why I think moving Wiseman right now would not, pun intended, be a wise move. You saw what I did there?
Yeah, but changes have to be made, and we know they have to do something. They can't just sit and do nothing, as we've mentioned.
Yeah, and Draymond Green, I mean, still really good defensive player. He was a candidate for Defensive Player of the Year. I read a stat that of the player-to-player connections in terms of highest assist marks, Green swinging to Curry was one of the best. All the others were point guard to big man alley-oops. So, like, I thought that was kind of interesting that, like, Green is still really effective in that Steve Kerr-centric, spread it out, pace and space offense. The thing with the Warriors that is frustrating if you're Steve Kerr is that you're running the same offense you did when you won titles. It just wasn't as effective because you didn't have Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, and Andre Iguodala anymore. So now you have to sort of plug in those pieces. You bring Klay back into the mix, albeit without a lot of those other key cogs. It's going to be almost a culture shock for him. I don't think Klay's going to struggle offensively to get his points. This is a guy who scored 37 points in a quarter. So I think he'll be fine there. I just worry about if they don't make a big change or don't make a big move and they struggle with a full roster and they really stare into the abyss and realize we are not good enough and we are way over the cap. Then you might start seeing the tearing down of the organization, like the real end. I think Durant's injury and leaving was the beginning of the end. This would be the real end. And I don't think that they're ready for that. I don't think anybody in the Warriors organization wants to see that. So, I think a big move is coming. I just don't know what way they're going to add into it. I'll give you one more that we didn't discuss is Kelly Oubre. He obviously not in a very inefficient player as well. Horrible 3-point shooter, even though he tries to take them, but he did average 15 points a game. He had a wrist injury. Like, do you think he'll come back?
Most likely.
You think so? But for a little less, maybe.
Is there really a market out there for him?
That's a good point.
LeVert, a step back three by LeVert, and the Pacers lead by five.
That's what we were talking about, Chris. Another weapon to be able to go to that could make a big time play.
Welcome to Indianapolis, Caris LeVert.
Adam, guess what?
What?
Rick Carlisle is back as the head coach of the Indiana Pacers.
Oh, from that long layoff he took.
Yeah, it was just as long as that pause that you gave me. You know what's funny, though, about Rick Carlisle? I don't know if he's trying to throw shade at the Dallas Mavericks, but when he announced that he was doing, he said, this is my kind of team. What did you look into that as, if we can talk about that for a second?
low key, nothing, no real expectations. Just go out and play. There's no behind the scenes, you know, wrestling to say. It's just you go out. You have just basketball players. You just have a simple front office. There's no real drama. And with Indiana, I was sort of surprised that they did fire
Nate Bjorgren. Yeah.
After 1 year, because he just didn't want to adapt. And I don't know whether they knew something like Carlisle would happen or there was sort of a backup plan, but it was very weird to not give him a second year, considering this roster largely, like, they're going to be intact next year. Yeah. So you had that year. This year was sort of the development year. So
right.
I don't know what's not to sort of like about this, because you have the team that's already together and you have a coach that players liked playing for. So it might just be, all right, go get your 5-6 seed. We'll all be happy. And am I wrong with this?
No, I do want to paint a little bit of a broader picture of it all for the franchise before I dive into where you just left off, is that when Rick Carlisle got there in 2003, he had gotten fired by the Pistons because Joe Dumars knew that Larry Brown was hunting for that job, and Dumars wanted Larry Brown, and that paid off with championships. So, hey, banners hang forever. Carlisle, when you and I know this, I don't know if all of the listeners know this about the Pacers, but when Rick Carlisle got that job in 2003, that team was loaded. Like, Jermaine O'Neal, Ron Artest, Reggie Miller was there, Jamal Tinsley was there. They were a really, really good team that was actually pretty well prepared to be like this defensively stalwart championship contender. That's not what Carlisle's walking into here, but I do agree with you on this one. It's a very stable roster from a cap standpoint, $119 million right on the lip of getting to the cap area or the threshold. So you don't have that much wiggle room, and you have talent. Like, Domantas Sabonis had like a career year. They flipped Victor Oladipo for Caris LeVert. Now LeVert had that scare with the kidney, that the mass on his kidney that they were praying wasn't cancerous, which looked like it wasn't. Thank God he came back and played, but he only played 35 games. He looked good, albeit rusty. You got Malcolm Brogdon for a couple more years. You got Miles Turner for a couple more years, even though a toe injury had kind of took him out late. TJ Warren, who was a beast in the bubble in Orlando, he played 4 games. He broke his foot. So they were a little incomplete, but from a cap standpoint, I agree with you, Adam. They're a pretty stable, complete roster with not too many questions left. The questions that are left are, can we get the most out of what we have on roster because we don't have flexibility? That's where Carlisle comes in. That's where it's like, I can make chicken salad out of this.
But like, the only two players you're going to probably lose are McConnell and McDermott.
Right. I can see him re-signing McDermott for about the same. Something. But, he got,
you know, if you get one of those two back, you have.
McConnell's going to get more elsewhere.
Yeah. So I don't. You know, even if you do lose McDermott, you could get a comparable player to him. So I don't see, as long as you're keeping, you know, Brogdon, Turner, Sabonis, LeVert, and Warren, you have your starting five returning.
And you Justin Holiday is one of the best 3-point shooters in the league. He made over 2 a game. So he's locked in.
You got Holiday, you got your young development big and Goga. They seem just sort of, again, this is the unexcited, they could just sort of move that they, I don't see how they won't improve, although it's not a sexy team or not a really interesting one, but it's just sort of, that's sort of been their definition. Even they had Oladipo, it was just, they're going to be decent. They're not going to be terrible. You know, like I said, the 7-10 range, let's just be happy with it and we're all good. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Carlisle's going to have that point of view. Now, he's not running the show. Kevin Pritchard is. So, like, that's something where we'll see what happens. I have to imagine that some of the Dallas assistants, I don't have them all off the top of my head. Maybe Jamal Mosley and Carlisle reportedly had a falling out, so I don't think he's going to go with them to Indiana. But I got a feeling that he'll be able to bring some pedigree in there, and he'll be able to have some respect for the players. I think what happened with Nate Bjorgren is that I just don't think the players were buying into what he was selling. You know, and this is the third new coach in 3 years. And, you know, you got to tidy up. We've said this before. You got to tidy up the ship when that happens. And so is there player movement? Yeah. Could they like make, could they want, maybe they can trade Brogdon now when he's at high value. I don't know if that's a smart deal. Miles Turner is the best shot blocker in the league. So despite the injuries, I just wouldn't move him because he's just got too much value on the defensive end. The one guy I think the two that I could say they could move is Jeremy Lamb and the big guy, the young big guy, Goga Batazi. Did I say his name? I think they can move him. You know, he had a – didn't he have that infamous moment with the Pacers assistant where he cursed him out and they almost got into a fight?
Yeah, that was the whole beginning of the end, and it really is ugly.
Bjorgren, right. Good point. So – but, yeah, I mean, in terms – and then in terms of, like, the style of play, like, they leaned a lot more offensively under Bjorgren than they did under – I can't even believe I'm saying this, like, former Pacer head coach and now – Eastern Conference Finals coach Nate McMillan. I mean, do you think they're kind of kicking themselves about that, that they kind of let McMillan go and now he's coaching the Hawks into a higher ladder of success?
Yeah, but I don't think he was going to do anything in Indiana. I think he had just sort of run his course there. And right. It's one of those things that happened of we need to try something different. And then every team thinks, you know, they're smarter than the next person. Like,
yeah,
and
Atlanta
remember,
did that with Holzer. Yeah.
I can't even. This is just terrible. The when USC hired that young guy, Kiffin. Mm-hmm. That's what all the NBA is starting to do. With all of a sudden, oh look, you have Brad Stevens. Oh, he's a wonderkid. Let's all try to get wonderkids now. Let's get these super assistants, and then they're all starting to backfire because like, oh, these guys really sort of don't know what they're doing, and you can't replicate that all because. You know, the old stalwart, you know, been around forever guy. They don't go to him. We need the new guy who has hip buzz terms, who, you know, got his team to play for him in the G League. And it's like, well, yeah, that's the G League because they will do anything for you because they want to get a real contract. NBA players like, no, we're not going to go do that. So
right.
It's one of those things. I think that you might have some stability with this team. I don't know what their roster shakeup is going to be.
X's and O's wise, the defense has to improve. Sabonis, while an all-star, had plenty of triple doubles. He's not a good defensive player. And that showed in the, those play-in games. They played two of them. I think they beat Charlotte and they lost to the Wizards, and they were both like very high scoring affairs. Like, and it was just a microcosm of the Pacers season. They just defensively could not figure it out, especially when Turner was out, and Turner's only one man. So they're rebounding, even though he's a big guy, their rebounding as a team was not very good. So you got to work on that. Maybe LeVert coming in as more of a point guard who can play two ways, that he can improve that if he plays a full season. Pray God that happens. Even Brogdon missed some games this year because he only played 56. Like I think the biggest issue with the Pacers is they need another big man. If you have to package like TJ Warren and Jeremy Lamb to make it happen and get another big man, maybe draft one in the draft. Like you got to do something there to just shore up the paint. And knowing Rick Carlisle, a guy who's gotten big man who's coveted some size to go there. You know, this is a guy who wanted DeAndre Jordan. He had Boban like and made it work. Like I can see more traditional lineups coming in to try to help out Sabonis. I'll give you one more to finish it off. Is there any nuclear option where they just trade Sabonis?
If they can upgrade.
Yeah, but what's
it's not a, it's not Sabonis? not a trade to blow up. It's a trade to, we can get somebody. I don't know who off the bat.
Really good guard to go with LeVert and Brogdon, and then you have this three-headed monster of a backcourt.
That's the sort of the thing. You'll go big for small, but it wouldn't, you know. But again, they're in a good position, which I don't, you know, you think you'd say with them, but, you know, just sort of see what, you know, you got going, and if changes need to be made, they can do it. It's not, oh, we got nothing.
DeRozan with five. DeRozan, two. DeRozan hits it! Oh, mama! 0.5 remaining. DeMar DeRozan knocks it down.
That's one of the biggest shots of his Spurs career, no doubt about it.
Adam, another ho-hum, boring San Antonio Spurs season. The only thing that was a little stunning about this one is they actually finished under 500, which I don't think they finished under 500 in the 2020 season once the bubble was wrapped up. I'm going to have to look that up. But it was just – it was definitely the first time I could remember watching a Spurs team where I expected them to be at a certain point, and they actually stayed at that expectation. They didn't raise it.
They didn't overachieve because
I don't believe so.
They didn't overachieve because everyone below them was so god awful that it was sort of embarrassing. But to be sort of the 10th and make your way into the playoff tournament, it's sort of, well, you know, okay, fine. They beat the Pelicans, who the Pelicans beat themselves, and they beat the Kings, who, well, the Kings sort of just aren't good. So it was one of, by default, yeah, the worst they could have probably been was 10th. But this was the beginning of the end. You trade away Aldridge. You have a lot of questions come up. This roster is just now, instead of being top-heavy, they're just extremely bottom-heavy. They have the back of their bench shored up. They just don't have any real superstars or any stars.
And you got to give like some credit to like Dave Tellup and Brian Wright and R.C. Buford. Tellup's one of their draft gurus. I remember him when he worked as a recruiting service guy at ESPN. Like, they actually do a good job of getting these small singles and doubles in the draft. Like, and you saw it sometimes in the regular season. Keldon Johnson had some nice moments. Derek White did take a step back. He had the ankle injury. He only played 36 games, but even when he played, he kind of struggled. DeJounte Murray has bounced back fully from the ACL injury. Thank God. Jakob Poeltl, Drew Eubanks. We didn't get to see too much of their first round pick Devin Vassell, but I think we'll see more in Lonnie Walker. So I just listed pretty much like the most like complimentary players. Like, they had Rudy Gay, who seems timeless, but now he's off the books.
He's off the books in 34. So I think he's going to be ring chasing now.
Greg Popovich loves veterans, and he's a steady hand, just like Patty Mills, another guy whose deal is up. So we'll see if the sea change really happens here, where they're just like, all right, veterans out, new ones in. The other one in the elephant in the room is DeMar DeRozan. We're going to see if they really pursue that for an extension.
Well, that's the thing, is he's going to get a big deal. Because but he's 31, so the last year or two of it will be underwater. So, and San Antonio is not known for overpaying, but they're going to have to overpay to get somebody on that team, because they are going to be literally in the high end of the lottery next year. Let's say they're going to let Gay go most likely. DeRozan, I could see them letting go, but who are you going to replace him with?
This I can see DeRozan signing a deal similar to what LaMarcus Aldridge deal, which was like kind of like a two plus one, or maybe like a 1+1.
Because he's not going to want to be 34 looking for a big deal. This is his last chance to get paid.
Right. That's a good point.
So if you do a 2+1, he's now going to be 34 on an expiring deal. Nobody's going to want to pay him that. Now is his sort of the time to, you know, like last. Oh, look at Kyle Lowry. His deal just ended, and well, he's what, 33 now. So
yeah, I think Kyle Lowry is in a situation very similar to a lot of players at that point in their career who were superstars. Now he's won a ring, but he's probably thinking, man, I'd like to get another shot at it. I don't know if he could do that at San Antonio. Greg Popovich is also going to Tokyo to coach in the Olympics. There's also a little bit of attrition going on in the coaching staff, which it always happens with the Spurs because they're such a well-respected organization and they have a really good follow-through. In terms of their coaching tree, that they always kind of cherry pick at it. But, you know, we're still waiting to see on Becky Hammond. Will Hardy, I think, just went to the Celtics. Am I right or wrong?
No, Celtics got Adoka.
No, but I think Hardy is assistant? An assistant, right? And that's the top guys. Chip England, the shooting wizard, I've always been told, he's there. Tim Duncan's there. So, like, they still got guys. What I'm saying is, like, it's whittling down to – it's almost like the Patriots. It's almost whittling down to the point where, like, you don't even have a coaching staff. It's just really Popovich and former players and, like, other guys that they just keep kind of, like, promoting from inwards, like, over and over again because they just keep losing them.
So, yeah, the coaching staff is going to have a new look, too.
So what do? They have no star. They have no real. They don't have the. They don't have much.
They need. I think that RC Buford knows that the pressure is finally starting to get onto him a little bit, and he has to take a swing. And they do have a little bit of cap flexibility. I mean, they got White locked in. They've got. They're gonna want to try to keep DeRozan. If you let DeRozan walk, that's $28 million you're freeing up. And you were already 20 under, so now you can really get a megastar. And then you got Popovich really as the driving point. Like, look, this guy has 5 rings, and he's might have an Olympic gold medal by that point. This guy knows what he's doing. You still got that, you know, Pat. There's the famous story that when Pat Riley went to visit LeBron when he was trying to recruit him to join Miami, that he brought all his championship rings and put them on his fingers. To try to like lure him in, like, you know, I don't know if that works as much anymore, but like, I think it can be helpful.
Yeah, but is this sort of an Atlanta situation where they just said, "What are you going to do? Are you going to rebuild? Are you going to trade?" And they just did absolutely nothing, and now they're sort of just a wasteland.
Mm-hmm. Or does Popovich finish up? Because he's so secretive, like, you know, it's impossible to even get like into watch practices with the guys because he's from that Belichick philosophy, or the army, the military philosophy of you don't shit, nothing gets out. So like, do you think that maybe he'll finish up and we just don't know it yet?
He also is old, so any year could be his last year, mm-hmm. in theory. So yeah. They have more questions than answers, and it's not looking good for them. Like it doesn't look like a quick bounce back. It doesn't look like they really have much looking up for them.
And their numbers across the board. I mean, the offense has always been – the offense has been pretty bad for a little while. I mean, it's not a surprise. But defensively, with the youth movement, that's where the struggles really came. They were still middle of the pack in defensive efficiency, but – other than block shots, they really struggled on a defense from a defensive standpoint. So yeah, we are sort of at that point with the organization where a swing has to be made, either through the draft if you really like somebody, you try to move up like they did with Kawhi, or you just go after a big time free agent like they did with LaMarcus Aldridge, which I think at the end of the day did pay off for him. I thought he had a good run, and I thought Aldridge had a good run in San Antonio now that it's come to a close.